Hey, I'm Adam Carolla.
I'm Dr. Drew.
And we are here to ask you to do us a little favor. If you like what you hear, share it with a friend.
Nice. Keep the pirate ship afloat, right?
Yeah, well, that's the only advertising we got. But it's the best kind.
It is.
Word of mouth.
It is.
Whose mouth?
Yours. Not yours, theirs.
Theirs.
Theirs, yes.
That's right. Thank you in advance for telling a friend, and enjoy the show.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but to get on. Man, to get on. Thanks so much for listening to the program. Thank you so much for supporting us. You can subscribe via the PayPal. $5 a month. Hell, man. I think it's 26 cents a show. We both get off of that bad boy. Thank you so much. And if you're going to go to Amazon, you click through the Adam and Dr. Drew Show.com and put a little wind in the sails of the pirate ship. Now, as we tape this, I'm going later this afternoon to my son's play. He's doing a play. Everybody, look out.
What role?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes
tree number three.
No, he can play a boulder or a tumbleweed on occasion.
You know, that's a waste of my time!
He's so good, though.
He's got range, the boy.
He's got vocal production.
Yeah. I was driving him to school today. I was asking if he was nervous, and he said, a little bit.
Did he declare he's the best, as is his custom?
No, but I did. I freaked him out good the other day, which is, you know, he announced to me that he's thinking about doing comedy, and then he came in to tell me he had a joke. And he said, all right, I have a joke. And he told me his joke. And his joke was, this was his own joke, wasn't bad. He says, you know, the sunscreen, with the amount of it he gets in his eyes and how much it burns, it should be called sunscreen.
Ooh, he thought that himself?
That's not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah. That's an original?
That's an original.
I like that.
Jeff Ross may have given it to him. I don't know. I think it was original. So I told him, that's a good joke. And he said, yeah, I'm thinking about being a comedian. And then I fucked with him a little bit. I said, you know how long it took you to tell me that joke? And he said, no. I said, it took about 30 seconds. And I said, you know how much time Daddy does when he does a show? And he said, how long? I said, 90 minutes. And then he just slapped himself on the forehead. Like they would do, like old-timey people would do. Or kids, he banged himself on the forehead and went, whoa. So he'd have to come up. So I said to him today, are you nervous about your play? And he said, a little bit, but he only has a line, you know, half a line, two words or whatever in it. And I said, yeah. Sometimes Daddy gets nervous. Daddy has to go perform. And he said, yeah, because you have to tell like 10,000 jokes. I said, yeah, it's true. The other thing that I always think about that just didn't exist is the play takes place. Now, I never was involved in any talent shows or pageants or things like that. I know.
Shocking.
My mom was kind of a pageant mom, and she forced me, and, you know, with the headshots, and she got me the headshot. You know, the one shot was the full headshot, and then the back was me as the bully, and me as the studious one, and me as the rough sailor guy.
But what I love about this descriptor of your mom, doesn't it put into fine focus how going either way is equally traumatic?
Yes.
If you're under stimulating to your kids or overstimulating your kids, you fuck your kids up.
Yes.
It's really interesting.
And I mean, wait a minute.
There they are. There they are, the two ends. Your mom and Mama June.
Well, no, the two, of course. Look, life is the same. Extreme hot, extreme cold. Is hot good or bad? In and of itself, like, no, hot, you know, hot roasted, hot, fresh donuts, you know, that just come out. That's good. Or pastries or buns out of the oven or pot roast or whatever. Jacuzzi, hot tubs, you know, nice. Fine. Palm Springs by the pool, you know, in the cabana, having a nice drink. Fine. So is hot bad? No, hot is only bad when you're in the desert and you're out of water. It's 122 degrees and you're Mojave. Like, your air conditioning's broke down. Like, so What about cold? Well, cold is good. Frosty beer tastes good. Jumping from the hot tub into the snow and then back in the hot tub again. You know, cold in and of itself, we have refrigerators in our house. It keeps the meats, the smoked meats, nice and ready to go and make a sandwich, a tomato, whatever. Fine. So it's kind of that way with the parents. The extreme is only bad when it's full time. You know, when it gets dangerous.
I'll even refine this even more and say, because your refrigerator is contextually good, it's good when you want to keep a tomato cold and a cold meats cold. By the same token, even an abusive parent is good if you want to fucking make a warrior or something, some fucking murderous killer out there to go survive in the desert, in a jungle. Abusive parent may be good, maybe adaptive.
All right.
No, seriously.
I understand. But what I'm saying is in this America in 2013, hot isn't inherently bad and cold isn't inherently bad.
Right.
You want to get the right mixture.
The golden mean.
About 71 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, 35, no good. 110, no good.
Neither of those are describing what's healthy. The extremes are not healthy.
My mama wasn't healthy,
right. And
maybe Drew's mama wasn't healthy, but a mom that says, oh, are you interested in acting? I will drive you to the audition if you want to go audition.
To see if you like it.
And then the next weekend, but then not be up in your grill, you know, what'd you say, what'd you do, do it for me, you know, then can go cold a little bit and say, now you can go into your room and rehearse alone. You know, you don't need me standing there holding a video camera.
Them not be stimulated by it.
Right. So the combination, my mom was just in a deep freeze.
Speaking of that, how's your therapy going? Have you made it? You've been going?
Good. Yeah. Yeah. It's been good. I've been talk therapy.
Doing any EMDR or anything yet?
No, it's not turned sexual, but I'm waiting.
Are you contemplating that? Consummating
I've
that?
I've heard about it. It's not out of question. I mean, it comes up a lot.
In therapy?
I'm saying it wouldn't be the first time that a client has, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying if it does, I'm not going to be surprised.
You would not be surprised and you wouldn't get in the way of it.
It's an intimate environment, Drew, with sound masking devices.
Huh?
You know what I mean?
Do you like drop your pants when you go in there or just give a hint? No.
No, I don't wear pants in
there. Oh, of course not. Of course not.
Pants off in the dressing room.
Yes,
I mean, waiting room. Waiting
her dressing room.
Waiting room. I keep calling it dressing room.
Yes.
Stupid. Anyway, I've said too much.
So, but it's good. You're making some progress.
No, I'm talking about, what a mess everyone is.
What? Family again?
No, I've really not gotten, it was only this week that I get into the family. And the thing about my family is even experienced clinicians do not understand my family. Like, they go, I'll bet your dad, because he at some point in his life wanted to be a performer, has feelings about you performing and wishing that he could. And it's like, yep, that sounds good. I'm sure that's in a textbook somewhere.
Sounds right.
This is worse. This is
you got to bring in that picture of them at the barbecue. Just bring that in and go, here. Just take a look at this. This is your performing guy.
I told her. Listen, there are two good stories, and I said it is. I told her the San Gennaro feast, which is that there's a couple all-star Corolla stories that they're unwritable, I believe.
The one, I think the other one, if I had to predict what the other one was, it would be at the dinner table after you've been on MTV for 3 years and they announced they don't have cable.
Well, these are, yes.
Remember that one?
No, there's three shining jewels in the Corolla crown of horrible parenting.
Yeah.
One is, now, as you listen to this, the Feast of San Gennaro. Is this weekend?
It is already.
Well, it's coming up.
Oh my god!
I know.
It feels like we just had it.
I know. I think it's one of those getting old things.
You didn't invite me this time.
Yeah, it's coming.
Is it? It goes all week, right?
Or it goes all through the weekend.
But seriously, when is this? Because I want to go.
It's.
When is the prima notte?
It is Thursday.
Okay.
It is coming up Thursday.
Okay.
So the great
can't make it.
The great thing is this. I'm 11 years into this. I think I'm year 11 into the Feast of San Gennaro.
Yeah.
And no one in my family's ever attended this thing, even though my dad is Italian, comes from an Italian neighborhood in Philadelphia, and lives average distance 3.7 miles.
Give your dad a pass. Like, he's been through brain surgery and shit this year. His vitality's got to be down. I mean, when you're
no, he missed the first decade.
I understand. Yeah.
Now his vitality's
all
down. So, no, I'm not. Now he gets a pass. Mm-hmm. So I never brought it up to him. We never really got into it. I never.
Is it your fault?
Partially.
Okay. Because you know not to do it because it's so deflating to even bring it up.
I figured out certain things with certain people, and I'm not really wrong. Like, you know, people.
What if?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. People say a lot like, oh, well, then you're not even bringing it up, so you're not even giving them the chance and
right.
blah, blah, blah,
right.
and blah, 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 blah. And I said many times, I've told the story where I used to be a championship long snapper, and I found out Jimmy's son many years ago was doing the long snapping at his high school, you know, JV team or something. And somebody said to me, well, you're really good at that. Why don't you go give him a couple of pointers? And my first impulse is, he doesn't want to hear from me. And the guy said, why not? You're really good at it. And when one of your best buddy's sons. Next time you're over for football Sunday, grab a ball, give him a couple pointers. And I just remember I had like a reaction like, he's not going to know. He's not going to care. He's not going to want to hear anything from me about that. And then a little voice crept into my head and went, stop doing that, Adam. Stop pushing people off. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You let him decide.
Yeah.
He's a kid. Maybe he wants to. And I walked up to him and I said, you got a football? I'm going to show you how to snap. And he said, I know how to snap. And I said, I know, but I bet you I could give you a few pointers. And he said, I'm pretty good. And I said, well, why don't you go get a football and show me? And he said, I don't have a football. And I said, I know you have a football, so go get a football. I'll wait for you out here. And he said, yeah, okay. And I stood out on the porch for 20 minutes, and he never came back.
Oof.
No. There's my point. I remember thinking to myself, all right, I should have trusted.
All right, but he
didn't want to hear from old man Carolla. I understood.
Let me propose, because in a way that's sort of reinforcing of your family of origin bullshit, but let me propose something different. If you really wanted your dad to go, you'd call his wife, your stepmom, and go, hey, I'd really like if dad showed up. Let's get going. She'd go, hey, whoa, yeah, thanks
I don't
asking.
Want him to go.
I know. That's part of the thing. And,
right.
But in a way, it's sort of more gratifying for you to have them continue to be on that no notice, no acknowledgement.
Yeah,
it's more satisfying in a weird way.
It's certainly more familiar.
Yeah,
and it's definitely consistent.
Yeah,
and look, there's no doubt about it that if I said to my mom, "Hey, it's really important for me that you be at the Prima Notte for the San Gennaro feast," she would definitely go, or most likely go, but. I don't care, and she doesn't care either.
Yeah,
so that's our relationship. So, but famous stories I told the shrink. I did bring up that, and I said, to be fair to my mom, you know, she got it from her mom. And my mom doesn't know that she's active in it, and it's not passive. She's active in her – I wouldn't use the word aggressive, but she is not – well, out of it. You know, my dad's out of it. My mom's active and doesn't know it because it comes in such a passive package, meaning she's very meek, she's very quiet, and she would never call you stupid or fat or ugly or anything. She has it's a little more insidious. My grandmother's the same way, and that's where she got it. She was raised by a horrible woman, which is, God rest her soul, which is this. I never brought up San Gennaro ever until I was 5 years in. I never brought it up. It's a big street fest and me and Jimmy and thousands of people and Tommy Lasorda. And it never came up. I never would bring it up. But somebody brought it up.
To her?
No. We're all sitting around the Thai food restaurant, as we're apt to do on somebody's birthday. And my sister said, I saw a picture of you at the supermarket. And I said, at the supermarket? Yep.
Most
and I
wanted,
said,
"What post office?
What was it?" And she said, "I don't know. My family's very non-committal about, you know, they just go, if you ask them like how much or when or what date or whatever, they'll just go, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just because it gets you to leave them alone and then they don't commit to it. Yeah. And I said, what do you mean a picture in the supermarket? I don't know. I said, well, was it behind the deli counter or something? Like a headshot? I don't know. I said, I'm intrigued now. Why is there a picture of me at a supermarket in Topanga Canyon somewhere that I've never been to?
Yeah.
Maybe you and Jimmy. I said, me and Jimmy now. What could this be? I was thinking, I cannot imagine what this is. Not at my supermarket, someone else's supermarket. What are we talking about here? She said, something with you and Jimmy and cheese. I said,
that's hysterical.
Cheese.
Molary cheese.
The plot thickens.
Cheese. Yes. And I said, San Gennaro, the Feast of San Gennaro, Precious Cheese is one of the sponsors.
Oh.
I'd probably had a display, big cardboard display up that said the Feast of San Gennaro, Precious Cheese, picture me and Jimmy.
Yeah.
Not sure why that didn't, she didn't wasn't able to download that part, but she just said you and Jimmy and cheese. And
it's like a big cardboard cutout of you guys, not like a little picture, like a big cutout.
Well, like a big cutout.
Oh, my God.
Well, no. I'm not saying 6 foot me and Jimmy. I'm saying big cutout saying Feast of San Gennaro and me and Jimmy, you know, Grand Marshal, whatever. So somebody at the table said, I think my mom said, what is the Feast of San Gennaro? And I said, well, this is where I got drawn in. I said, it's a feast that Jimmy and I put together some years ago, and it's turned into quite a big affair, and they shut the street down, and the carnival comes in, and they serve food and the kids. And as a matter of fact, I was thinking about last year because I awarded a scholarship. You know, we actually have a scholarship fund, and we send a kid to college every year. And, you know, we take a couple of kids and we raise money for them to go to college. And then my grandmother blurted out, John Bon Jovi gave $1 million to Katrina relief.
Wow.
She was silent the entire time. Silent. But I could see she was going through her mind, like,
how can we diminish this? How can we ruin this?
Got to get it off the subject. Yeah. Somebody in our family has achieved some measure of success and is talking about it aloud.
And giving back, God forbid.
And giving back and then speaking about it in some sort of glowing term where he's feeling good or proud about himself and his accomplishment. Something. She screamed.
That's extreme envy. Extreme.
Her next move would have been to take her shoe off and throw it at me. Like, literally, just blurted out. We weren't talking about Katrina earlier or anything. It was just, she blurted out in the middle of this, and it was almost done in a panic. Like, I remember, it had been 45 excruciating seconds of me sort of boasting about this achievement and the college scholarship and the helping the kids and the community and all that. And so she shouted out.
What did you say?
I just sort of laughed and looked at her. And then, but then the whole family turned and looked at her and said, that's very generous. So then we talked about Jovi, as Grandma called him. We talked about Bon Jovi and the $1 million that he raised. And I remember just thinking to myself, all right, well, that'll be that. That's the end of San Gennaro and the Corollas.
It's that diminishing and shaming and, you know, deflating.
Right.
And that's what I find fascinating. I'm going to talk to a guy on the Dr. Drew podcast, a guy named Porges, that has this polyvagal theory. His whole thing is about the vagus nerve slowing your heart down in response to shame and how that's all connected to the emotional system.
Well, it was.
And so it deflates you.
That'll air next Monday, by the way.
Really?
This Monday or next Monday?
No, not tomorrow, the Monday after.
Ah, okay.
Well, I'm going to be talking to him. Oh, boy. I got to get boned up on his stuff.
The thing that's interesting about it and by the way, how effective it is
the shaming.
No, not the shaming. The
deflating?
What my grandmother did.
Yeah, the deflating. Yeah.
How effective it is.
Yeah.
1 year later, I spoke to my mom, and she said something like, oh, maybe we can get together this weekend or something like that. And I said, well, I can't do it this weekend. That's the San Gennaro feast. And she said, what's that?
Oh.
And I said, what's the San Gennaro feast? And she said, yeah, I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, no, I told you about it at the table a year ago. And she said, I've never heard anything about the San Gennaro feast. And I said, mission accomplished, Grandma.
Yeah. Did you tell? Did you bring it up to your mom's attention?
I did. I said, oh, no, I was telling you about the San Gennaro feast when Grandma dove in with the Bon Jovi cock block. And
did your mom, like, laugh or cop to it? Or
my mom's not a gregarious laugher, but she did realize, oh, that was Helen bad. Going, I cannot tolerate achievement, jumped in and flushed it from the memory of everyone at the table.
Is it weird that you and your mom can't team up in your appreciation of having the horrible relative with the envy and stuff? Like, you guys couldn't connect on that front,
at least? Second story I told to the therapist was the one that is, again, it's the third jewel in the crown. I think the first is give me one good reason why I should get cable when I had two shows on cable. But I think the one in there is, as I've told before, the Jon Stewart story, which is that is my mom picking up where my grandmother left off without being aware of it. It's completely unconscious,
yeah.
But it is if you are conscious at all, it sounds absurd. My mother, who never displays any sense of enthusiasm, you know, you don't bring up a band or an amusement park or a ball team or anything and have my mom go, I love those guys. They rock. Or I love that place. Or fucking, even if you brought up Hawaii, she wouldn't go, Maui's fantastic. You know,
right,
she'd just go like, you know, she'd make a noise.
There's no joy. No amplified affect.
Anything.
Yeah.
But she literally, she walked through my door 9 years ago holding a VHS tape and announced to the world, do you know Jon Stewart? Have you heard of Jon Stewart? Have you heard of this man?
Yeah.
I said, we're on the same network.
So. And you have the same agent? Do you tell her that?
Well, no. I didn't tell her that because I don't. Why would I?
Okay.
I'm the guy. I got enough trouble for talking about San Gennaro. You know,
deflating. Yeah,
yeah. I'm bringing up shit.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of nodding. Ah, Jon Stewart. Yeah, I've heard of him. I'm friends with Jon Stewart. We have the same agent, and I have an agent that has, you know, five clients, and he's one of them. Yeah. But I just sat there and went, yeah, I know. And he said, she held a VHS tape, and said, this guy's amazing. This guy's amazing. So, man, I got him on Oprah. I'm going to watch him. I'm going to show you him on Oprah.
Oh.
And I said, yeah, all right. We'll eat, and then we'll watch John on Oprah. And I just played it how I always play. I never say anything. I never bring up anything. I never do anything. But Lynette couldn't stop. She couldn't bite her lip. She couldn't bite her lip. So we had the tape. She put the tape down. Said, look, we're going to go eat some brunch, and then when we're done, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna rock Shitter your world
yeah.
with Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
And Lynette said, because she's a human being, she said, you know, they have the same agent. And then my mom went, oh, they do, huh? And he said, you know, he and Adam are friends. I mean, they go out to dinner when Adam goes to New York. And she went, he's a little hit and miss.
Jon Stewart.
Yes.
Oh!
And we never watched a tape. We never watched a tape.
Oh,
it's been a decade. He's hosted the Oscar since.
Yes.
His name has never been spoken.
No, you've soiled it.
You've soiled
it by being associated
with told
him.
Jon Stewart, I'm sorry. You've lost a fan. My mom was a huge Jon Stewart fan until... the unthinkable could
but
happen.
But that's envy again. Envy is about soiling. It's about, that's now, why she had to literally.
The thing that's great is I didn't say, you know, he's a horrible racist. You know, he's a racist. He's incredible.
On some weird
all
level,
I did was say I'm friends with him.
On some weird level, it's rubbing shit on things. You rubbed your shit on him. It's soiled. Helen had to rub her shit on you because you came out with it. You know what I mean? But Bon Jovi, generous man, makes me think of something else generous. But this stamps.com.
Stamps.com.
I've got to talk about stamps.com.
I love stamps.com.
They have a special offer, no risk trial, $110 bonus. They have 2 billion letters and packages sent using them, stamps.com.
Billion.
Why are you still going to the post office? It's like McDonald's, billions and billions. Easy, convenient, buy and print U.S. official U.S. postage from your own computer. You'll never send a they'll even send you a digital scale that automatically calculates the exact postage.
Plug it into the computer, and it'll come right out of your
printer. Any letter, any package, any class of mail. Special offer. Use our code ADS. You get a no-risk trial. It's a $110 bonus offer that gives you the scale for free, $55 postage, or just think of it as $55 you print out at your computer because it's the same damn thing.
Yep.
Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Go click the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in ADS. That is stamps.com, promo code ADS.
Thank you. All right. So, Drew, what is it that turns, obviously, the grandma into somebody who – now, we're not – I'm not – I understand, like, when I'm talking about, hey, I was at the Rolex Historics driving the Newman 300Z, I understand the tune-out factor with that.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're it's a pretty exciting event. They could have some enthusiasm about it, but I understand it has to do with automobile.
Yeah.
They don't like automobiles.
They may not share it,
I could catch on fire, or I could win the Rolex Cup, so there should be some, but I understand, like, there's a tune-out factor.
You could at least say they don't understand the implication.
But when the son and or the grandson is talking about starting a huge charity event that takes place over the course of days and thousands of people in the streets of Los Angeles where he was raised and where you were raised. You grew up literally miles, just a couple of miles from your own backyard. Why the necessity to dive in and shit on that point?
Because it triggers envy. She can't feel the envy because that's hateful, horrible feelings. So she has to rub her shit
and,
on it.
And then the Jon Stewart part.
Same. Well, you anything associated with you soils it.
Is it that? Well, here's what I'm saying.
It's a little bit anybody that would want to be.
What do we really? I know. Is it that?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so.
Like, if he'd be a member of your club. Oh, then he's not. He's the Corolla Club. No.
So, now, again, Jon Stewart came to Los Angeles to host the Emmys, probably host the Oscars, probably 3 years after this discussion. It wasn't, oh, your friends come in to host, or
I think it probably operates.
His name has not been spoken.
I get it. It probably operates on such an emotional level that it probably is like, out.
Right. So every other human being would say, you know this guy?
What's he like?
Yeah. What do you mean the same agent? Yeah. What do you mean going out to dinner? What do you mean, and he's hosting the Oscars? Can you get us tickets? Can we go backstage? Yeah. Can we meet him?
Can we see a rehearsal?
It's zero, and it goes all the way. It goes from that. I mean, it literally, like, because to normal people, if you came in and went, I love The Who. I love that band. I love Quadrophenia. I love Who's Next. And you went, I'm the road manager. You next thing out of your mouth is, can you get me tickets? Not, oh, forget it. I'm done with the band.
Right. Their thing is like, oh, I didn't realize their shit.
Right. So what's going on psychologically?
It's that I don't know for sure, but I see envy operating here, which is a horrible emotion. And envy comes sometimes.
But don't you think it's just a simple – if it's – like you mentioned, if anyone in our family – if this is suitable for anyone in our family or anyone in our family has participated in this or done this, it can't mean anything. It has to be – worthless. It's valueless.
It's sort of a narcissistic thing, which is, you're an extension of me, I'm shit, and therefore anything you touch is shit.
So Jon Stewart went from the only human being my mother's ever told me was funny.
Was enthusiastic
the
only,
it's not like she walked in a week early and went, do you know this guy Dane Cook?
Yeah.
She's never brought any human being's name up to me in comedy as it pertains to, boy, this is funny, except for Jon Stewart. And Jon Stewart is now dead to her.
It operates on a deep level, man.
Name
you
will
know it.
never be spoken again.
Hey, speaking of comedians, did we talk about Jimmy and the twerking video?
No.
You and I talked about
that?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it?
Okay.
Because I just thought that was so great. I can't remember. I've been so enthusiastic about it. I've been talking about it.
I know. We're probably knocking on the door 20 million views by the time people hear
genius.
This.
Genius. And the way he exposed it, you know, the way he delivered
unbelievable.
It was so perfect.
Unbelievable.
And then I got a couple other things for you. Brown skin.
Mm-hmm.
Something about you and brown skin.
Oh, he's talking about people being more attracted to mutts these days. Or he said something about you saying that.
I said that.
No. I said that you've always talked about genetic diversity.
Yes, being a good thing.
Although
I've also said I find it strange that in spite of genetic diversity being clearly a biologically advantageous sort of strategy, why do people turn inward and kind of stay with their own races and stuff? It's weird.
Well, certain cultures put a greater emphasis on that than others.
It may be a way of protecting a culture more than a race in reality.
Yeah, you know what or whatever it is. Yeah. But be that as it may, I was saying the other day that, you know, women are all spray tanning themselves. We all sort of agree that there is, from an attractive level, there's such a thing as too black and there's such a thing as too white.
Mm-hmm.
Like people just don't like people that are
translucent.
And there's a dark version of that, too, where people are just they're so dark that people don't find it attractive. And then people find this sort of in-between caramel color that every woman is sort of striving for now.
Yeah.
The black women are sort of getting lighter and the light women are getting a little darker. And this notion – and I mean what I'm saying is they're putting on makeup that is – making them have lighter features, the darker women.
Miss America is now dark-skinned Indian.
The lighter women are putting on stuff to spray tan, turning themselves orange, essentially. So I'm saying, now obviously all women do is try to get guys to fuck them. They don't,
is that all they do?
They don't talk about it. No, it's...
That's all they do.
I've had them all wrong.
These two are excited now. Really? That's all they do?
No, not.
Gary and Chris are like, what?
No, the right
guys.
Why don't
guys?
We
have the women working here?
The right guys to fuck them.
Shit.
Yeah. Not any guys. The right guys. A certain elite group.
Famous guys.
Fraternity. Yeah. They want to do is, look, if this guy, this right guy, If they like long hair, then out come the hair extensions. You know what I'm saying?
If the guy likes long hair.
They're looking for this look.
The one that the guy wants.
When I say the guy, it's James Franco. It's like one guy. No, what I'm saying is women are constantly looking to be more attractive to men.
But they kind of do it for women, too. It's a
whatever
weird
they do, they're trying to dial it in.
All right,
look. In periods of time when we like women, they're a little more curvy.
Yeah,
they put on a little weight.
Yeah.
We want women a little skinnier, they lose the weight.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
So the fact that women are all sort of becoming this caramel color, this kind of in-between color, that when you turn on some of these daytime talk shows, there's five chicks sitting around, and they're all different ethnicities, but they're all the same color.
Yeah.
It's weird. I started thinking, I wonder if this is that genetic diversity that Drew had spoken about 15 years ago starting to play out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That we don't – genetically, we want what's best for our seed, you know, and that's what attracts us. And so – seeing this genetic too dark or too light or whatever, that's not going to be good for our seed. Our seed wants the diversity that's in the middle. Mm-hmm. And that's why the women are painting themselves to get darker, the white women, and vice versa. Is there something to that evolution?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, what's challenging to interpret, though, is these things always play out in a cultural context.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been freed up to let our biology kind of play out a little bit, and that's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And the extent that it gets free, that it goes this direction.
All right,
which makes perfect sense to me. And it was interesting. I on my HLM program, I have a woman that is like, people get pissed because she sounds like a racist, but she's just making these extreme positions for polemic.
You mean the chick with the lampshade gets
the
pissed?
Lampshade? No, the lampshade chick is the one I'm talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she says horrible things and about white people to sort of make a point. She's not really that racist, but
I can't get by the shower curtain and lampshade combination she wears.
The shower curtain? She wears it's a crown. How dare you?
Mm.
It's a crown. Anyway, she was even saying, she was saying these, you know, horrible things about the Black Holocaust and white people treating white. And she goes, in a few years, it's not going to matter anyway because we're not going to know who's white and who's black. I thought, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's absolutely true. That even if you take an extreme position on, let's call it a racist position, you still have to acknowledge that you can't even maintain that position because those things are going to become much blurrier very soon.
Does she have a fake name and a real name?
Yes. Scheherazade Ali.
Right. But
Miss Ali.
But her real name is Lucy Brown?
The
real name's always comical, right?
What I love about her, she takes the crown off and she becomes Aunt B. Like that. She becomes like a little old
lady. But her real name's like Wanda Jenkins,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I love that. I got to get one of those things going.
Fake name?
Just a whole affect.
What would your fake name be?
Yes, Capizio, Lord of the Dance. You know, and I just never stop talking about my roots, my heritage, and how my people have been wronged. I just feel like there's some money there.
You know, it's funny. You bring this up. We were watching the Mayweather fight recently, mm-hmm. and my wife literally started going off for a good 5 minutes about how beautiful Mayweather's skin was. Mm. Look at the brown, beautiful skin.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
See? I'm talking yeah. about. James?
Yes?
What's going on? 31,
hey,
Wisconsin?
Guys. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My question's for Drew. A few years ago, my doctor diagnosed me with low testosterone, put me on steroids, and you've talked in the past about hormone replacement therapy, but you've also talked about steroids, both in good and bad contexts. I've, for the most part, been on the testosterone. I went to go talk to a urologist about a vasectomy, and he was kind of questioning why it was. He wanted me to see another doctor to see if, and he kind of put it in terms of kick-starting the testicles. I want to do it healthy.
Hang on a second. You're speaking in lots of, like, fragments.
By the way, kick-starting is not the term I like to use when it comes to testicles.
No, anything to do with kick.
I'd say jump-start.
Jump-start would be much better.
Jump-start, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Low testosterone is a symptom, like fever. Why do you have low testosterone? That's not a diagnosis. Okay, so that needs to be answered, number one. And number two, taking testosterone to restore circulating testosterone levels to normal should not suppress your testosterone production or your testicular function. And why did you use steroids and testosterone in the same breath?
Who should he talk to?
An endocrinologist, for sure. By the way, taking excessive testosterone or steroid can increase your risk for prostate cancer, for sure.
All right. Dr. Drew, someone's got a question about you recognizing my genius. Go ahead, Mike. Take all the time you need.
Shocked you didn't go to that question first.
Sit back, Ace. You'll enjoy this. Guys, I love you both. I love the show. And if you'll allow me to ask this question, I have a personal question, if you'll allow me, if not, I understand. The question about the genius is, Drew, when you first met Adam, I'm sure if you just look at his resume, you probably thought, funny guy, entertaining guy, you know, he's going to be the color man, basically, on Loveline. At what point did you realize, hey, this guy's extremely smart, he's got an aptitude for, I won't say diagnosing, but recognizing, and I'm sure that's grown with time, but he's got an aptitude for some knucklehead comedian off the streets for really, you know, being able to point out what's going on with people's lives the way he does. I mean, I imagine you probably went home to your wife at some point and said, this dude's unreal when you first met him. And seriously, I mean that. Just want to kind of hear that from you. And if you'll allow me, I have a personal question.
Okay, hold on. Give a little more about Adam's genius before you're done.
No. I know Drew didn't recognize it.
No. Oh, first of all, there was like a halo around you. I was glowing. There was like I was basking in the light. I did recognize it, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
You know that's why I was one that suggested you for the show.
No. Drew, what I'm saying is Drew thought I was funny. And Drew thought I was very funny. But what Drew didn't realize is how uncommon funny really is, even amongst people that he thinks is funny.
I didn't. No, you made me study funny. You made me to keep up with you and participate
right.
with you.
You saw enough comedians not be funny on our show to know how these guys work.
Funny to me was nothing I gave thought to. Funny was just funny, like green is green.
Right.
And you insisted that I pay attention to improvisational sorts of cues and that you understood what you were doing was funny. You came at me with that very early.
I
resisted.
No, I know, but what I'm saying to you is what people from a layperson's standpoint, they think this guy's funny and they think Jeff Foxworthy's funny too, or whatever comedian is funny too. There's a difference between being funny and then being able to do what I used to do.
Yes.
That was the problem. There's plenty of funny people. Not many could do that.
Correct.
What was the number one answer I would give to people when they would ask, what is the magic behind Loveline? How does it work so well?
You would say, I'm good, Drew's good, and they leave us alone.
And then they would laugh and go, seriously, why does it work so well? And then I'd say, because I'm good.
Yeah, we're good.
Because they can't.
Oh, brilliant one.
People can't do this, what
but,
we
but
do.
But I sort of chalked up to understanding kind of radio, too. You sort of understood radio, and you were good at doing that. And I would say I had several aha moments.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you what they were, Mike, as long as you bring them up.
Ears.
The very first day we filmed that Loveline pilot,
mm-hmm.
we filmed for like 6 or 7 hours. And at the end of it, clearly something was happening, and the Tracy, our stage manager, came up to us. Remember this? She came up at the end of the day. It was like 9 o'clock at night. We're all tired. She goes, how many years you guys been working together? And we go, we met this morning.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, really. How many years?
Right.
And we're like, no. This is just what happened here. So that, I thought, oh, interesting.
Right.
I'll never forget that. Two, by the time you were on the radio and Ann pulled that thing about alerting Ricky to the pilot.
Yes.
That was not long into the radio experience,
mm-hmm.
and I already knew you could listen and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I knew you were paying attention, and you were interested in people and their behavior. And I was sort of chalking that up to doing good radio at the time and stuff like that.
It was a fax that somebody sent in that was in the audience for the live taping of the MTV show, before it was an MTV show, that sent it into the studio, and our producer pulled the fax and gave it to Ricky Rackman and didn't show it to us so that he could confront us about
it. We didn't even confront us. Remember, he reeled us in.
Yeah.
What did you guys do this weekend?
Yeah.
We're like, oh, nothing. What? Why? What happened? Yeah. Oh, I just wonder what you guys did. Were you guys together? No. I didn't say that.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great trait to have as a producer.
Adam Drew.
It's a wonderful, wonderful human quality to have. I wish my kids were imbibed with that quality. It's a great quality.
And there was a third. There was a third sort of aha. I was thinking about, what was it? I know a bunch of little ones, you know, that like that. Where
great instincts as a producer.
It was becoming increasingly clear that you know, something was going on. So, Mike, what's your personal question?
Can't believe she's not on to bigger and better things. Just can't believe it.
Thank you, guys. Adam, I'm similar to you, Adam. I'm 37. I've never had a child of my own. I am raising a stepdaughter that I've raised for many years.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But I've heard you say before that, and I feel exactly this way, my parents weren't great parents, and I'm just scared to death that I'll be a crappy parent.
Yeah.
And then I also have this thought that I'm going to regret forever, once I know my boys can no longer swim, that I'm going to regret forever and feel like, you know, what if? And I just want you to try to sell me, because I know you've said before that you felt you didn't want to mess up kids, and I feel the same way. You know, I also kind of feel I'm afraid I may not want them. You know, what if I have them? And I'm like, oh my God, this is work. It's hard. What would you say to your experience? How would you – I'm not saying convince me to have kids, but could you speak to that a little? Because I run out of time.
All right. Ironically. Look, I don't know that there's ever a great time to have kids. I don't know.
There's a great saying. There's never a great time to be sick, and never a great time to get married, never a great time to have kids, never a great time to die. There's just never a good time to be born, never a good time to die.
It's just things happen. It's just life.
Yeah.
And as far as making a pitch for kids in terms of, oh, it's not that much work, or it's relatively cheap, or any of that kind of stuff, or it's not a big time suck, or whatever it is, I can't make that argument. What I can say is it's satisfying, and sometimes it can be tragic, and sometimes There's highs and there's lows. And look, your kid could be one of the Manning brothers, and there could be two Super Bowls between the two of your sons, or they could be a junkie and featured on one of Drew's next shows. No guarantees. No guarantees in any endeavor in life. That does not mean you don't endeavor to endeavor. You do it. Using your math of what if and what about the expense and how about this? Okay, duct tape yourself to a sofa and put yourself on an IV drip and wait to die.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could go out and experience the highs and lows and all the in-betweens of being a parent. I'm not going to be one of these jack-offs that says, you know, there's no more important thing a person can do with their life than, you know, there's important things that people can do. You're probably not one of them. But
well, truth be known, back when we were younger, it's like, hey, you're overpopulating. Hang back, everybody.
Right, cool. Right. So you hang back, and you're 37, and I find being a parent very satisfying. I now couldn't imagine life without my twins. On the other hand, I'm sure I would have been leading a satisfying life without them. There's, you know, it's just life. So you go out and do it. And if you get up in your head about it, it really becomes like eating a hot dog and touring the factory first. Mm. Like, just fucking put some mustard on, take a bite, wash it down with a slug of beer, and move it on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not going to kill you. And if you really want to study it and dissect it and break it down and, you know, do all this, you know, well, it's 2013. So in 2040, when it comes time for our kids to enter college, you know that the average college tuition is, stop right there. If you're there, you're already out the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You start factoring in what if and
Oh, yeah.
Do you know how many percentage of marriages end in divorce and blah, 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 blah. Don't even. You want to be, by the way, you want to be one of those people that just goes, 50% of marriages, you don't think you're better than that? Half the kids that are born today are unwed. You don't think you're better than that? Why don't you be better than that? Are you just a statistic? Yeah, we live in the country, a country that's ahead of almost every other place on the planet. So why are we going by this yardstick where 50% of humanity doesn't see its 50th birthday, but we do here. Mm. Do what you like. Be a parent. Be a good parent. And check out LegalZoom.com because, you know, that marriage could go south. Just being honest with you. Got to protect those assets. Now you got to build a business. That's right.
Will.
That's right. Remember, everything used to be and sons?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Son takes over the podcast. Yeah. Corolla and Sons Moving Company. I saw whatever in Sons, but it was a porta potty pumping truck. You know what I thought? If I was a son, I'd be like, hey, Dad, did you take the name off there? I know we don't use it specifically, but
it's bad enough having the last name on there.
It's a big tank full of poo. Mm-hmm. He's driving around. Okay. Where are we? Ah, your business, your dream business. You want to take care of business. You want to start a business, your personal assets. You want them protected, legally protected. LegalZoom is where you go. LegalZoom.com. That's where they come in. They've helped over 1 million businesses get started. They can help you. If you're ready to launch your dream, LegalZoom's going to be right next to you, holding your hand, helping you save hundreds of dollars. Go to LegalZoom.com, see what they can do for you.
Form an LLC, get a DBA, incorporate, or form a nonprofit, all starting at just $99. Plus, you'll save even more when you enter Drew, D-R-E-W, in the referral box at checkout. Help ensure your business and assets are legally protected at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom can provide self-help services at your specific direction or connect you with an attorney, but they're not a law firm.
DRW. Is that it? Is it Drew or is it DRW?
DREW. Did I not say that?
And get the E part.
Sorry, DREW.
All right. Shannon.
Hello.
What's going on, Shannon? 25, Charlotte?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me. Love your show, first of all. We're coming out to see you in Seattle. Really excited about that.
Thank you.
So my boyfriend and I
Hold on a second, Shannon. You're going from Charlotte to Seattle? Is that what she said?
Yeah, I'm coming for a vacation.
Doesn't seem like a long enough commute for me.
Oh, God.
I like Mexico to be a little farther east, but
all
right.
Oh, my God.
So be it. Thank you, Shannon. Go ahead.
So our question is, my boyfriend obviously much prefers to have sex without a condom, But I actually enjoy it more with the condom, and I was just wondering if that is normal. And
why? What is it that you notice different?
I can get off a lot quicker and easier when we have condom.
And what do you think that is?
Friction?
I guess so. I don't know. I mean, we're just kind of wondering if there if that's a common thing. Is that
maybe it's his misery that you thrive off of sexually.
Maybe that's
I think that's probably it. But why don't you take turns? Why don't you first with the condom and then second without the condom? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we do. We do. And we just kind of, you know, we're wondering if that's a normal thing.
You know, I'll be honest. All the tens of thousands of calls over the years, never had this one. So there you go.
Unless it's, remember the ribbed for her pleasure?
Oh, is it a special condom?
No. Just anything, really.
Yeah. So it's for some reason it works for you. That's great. You've discovered something. So why should that be different than a certain position or a certain instrument or, you know what I mean?
Here's how chicks work, though. I believe if he painted on a condom, she would still get off. Just thinking that he had a condom on.
Try it. Well, he's got to portray the misery the same. So he's got to be just as miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Kill me, by the way, but that's all right.
All right. Well,
no,
that's
very interesting. It's
so
very interesting.
So without it, now, honestly, what if he said, all right, I'm going to put this condom on now, and you went, okay, and then he's like, okay, I'm going to put this pillow over your head now, and you were like, uh-oh, and then he took the condom off real quick and started having sex with you. Do you think you would, A, notice, and B, be able to have an orgasm if you thought he had it on?
With the pillow.
With the pillow.
I mean, I think we might need to split test it. We could do it both ways and see which works.
She liked my idea better.
All right. I'll try half a condom. Long ways.
Long ways?
Just as a compromise, Drew. You're preaching. You preach compromise.
Just a reach, so to speak.
I don't know if it's how it stays on, but...
Just tie it up like a bow. A
couple pipe cleaners. Remember pipe cleaners? Yes. You used to be able to go into somebody's house and find a pipe cleaner.
People would make things out of
them. Yeah, kids make little Gumby things out. But it used to be like, yeah, so I'm some upstairs drawer. It's by my pipes. I have a pipe go round. Like a pipe rack.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, well, let's see. What pipe am I in the mood for today?
Ooh.
My thinking pipe or my solving crime pipe? Or my dispensing advice to a youngster pipe? You know what I mean?
I'm just thinking of Dennis the Menace's father with the pipe.
Yeah, the guy smoked a pipe. And actually, it smelled nice.
Yeah.
And it sort of made it smelled. Dads used to dress like dads, but they smelled like dad. You know, guy smells like scotch and a pipe. That's dad.
That's masculine.
All right. Me and Drew, Little Reunion Tour, Volume 1, highlights all the best of Bakersfield, Santa Barbara, Denver, all available for well under $5. You can get it at adamcroll.com or iTunes as well. And again, thank you for going through the PayPal button and subscribing to the show. So until next time. I'm Kroll for Dr. Drew, Chris Max Pata, and Gary Haftart saying, mahala.
This is Corolla Digital.